This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
My guest today on Digging in the Dirt is Louise Washer, who serves on the board of the Pollinator Pathway and is also president of the Norwalk River Watershed Association. Louise is a regular here on Digging in the Dirt now because she's tirelessly working on issues that affect you and I and our planet. And she is here to tell us about an upcoming conference on pesticides happening in Hartford this month. So briefly explain the Pollinator Pathway to the uninitiated, Louise.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on again. Always love to explain the Pollinator Pathway and talk about the issues that we're working on. The Pollinator Pathway started in Southwest Connecticut in 2017, and it just kind of exploded. The idea is just to encourage people to plant native plants for pollinators, kind of rethink their lawn and avoid pesticides. And it caught on in such a way that now it's in, I think, 20 states and across 350 different communities. It's a really a grassroots network of people doing this in their own town or their own neighborhood, and trying to connect, create, restore safe habitat for pollinators, and then connect to their neighbors and their neighboring towns so that we actually have create like a green corridor that pollinators and also birds and other wildlife can use to move around.
Yeah, I love the idea because it's sort of elective. You know, you don't have to join anything, or, you know, you can donate, but you can just embrace the ideas. Like on your website, it says rethink your lawn, plant natives, remove invasives, and avoid pesticides. Those are easy things people can do. And the one thing I've embraced, and it's hard, and I want to ask you about that, is, you know, the messiness that comes with rewilding or doing a pollinator pathway type of yard. It's when it's blooming, it's great. But then when winter comes in the fall, to leave the leaves there so that all the bugs and places where insects nest for the winter, that's a difficult thing for most people to embrace. You find that the case?
Yeah, and we do have a lot of conversations. And I think there's a whole spectrum of how far you can go on this. I've become a kind of a leave the leaves nut. And I really do just leave them where they fall. I've replanted kind of under, I have one big red oak that is a great host plant for lots of moths and butterflies. They lay their eggs on the oak leaves and then they fall down, and that's where the larvae overwinter. So I've, you know, the more I think about that, the more I was like, I just want to leave them. So I created what is being called, I did not name this, but it's being called a soft landing. So I just planted like native bunch grasses under there and some asters and stuff. So I just leave that part messy. And then I rake around it. I kind of like gently move the leaves over to that area. So I've kind of made that the way that I do it so that it is wilder looking, but that it still looks intentional. You know, it doesn't look like I fell asleep at the wheel here.
Right. Yeah. You can mix it up.
I'm still in charge of the yard. Yeah.
Yeah. You can mix it up. So you please your neighbors and you please yourself, and you definitely please the insects and the birds, you know, cause I've noticed, because we planted a long time ago, a chaseberry tree, which is a very interesting tree, you know, and it has a medicinal quality to it, but it has beautiful blooms, which the bees and the butterflies love. And then it gets these little chaseberries all over it. And I noticed that the cardinals in my yard, I have quite a few cardinals that nest nearby. They come by and they are eating the chaseberries all winter long. And I find that I go, wow, this it sunk in. This is why we do this.
Yeah, I love that. I love one of the native shrubs that keeps its berries really long is winterberry. I'm sure you've noticed, like, it's so beautiful. It's snow and there's no color. And then you have these red berries. I did read that the birds, they're very, I don't know, maybe tough, or there's something about the consistency of them and the amount of they don't have like a lot of protein or whatever. I'm not a bird person, but birds, they're not birds' first pick, but they are there so long into the winter that when there's nothing else, there's the winterberry. And I love that idea that it's like sort of the, you know, special thing kept.
Yeah, there's food around. And that's something I think that the Pollinator Pathway talks about, is that trying to have blooms all, you know, rotating out, you know, so that you always have something blooming. And then you have also all these deteriorating plants that the local insects and birds and animals take advantage of all winter.
Yeah, and a lot of the like empty reeds and stuff that are the leftover plants from the previous year, that's where a lot of the cavity nesting bees spend their winter. So they'll go down into the stalk of your hydrangea or your Joe Pye weed. And so if you can leave them, that's the next generation of bees in there. The other thing I was going to add about the messy yard is Pollinator Pathway and lots of other organizations have habitat signs that you can put in your yard. Like we have one. If you go on the Pollinator Pathway website, you'll see it's just a either 6-inch or 12-inch disc that says, native plants, pesticide free. And it lets people know, oh, this is a there, there's a reason for the way this looks.
Right.
So that also helps.
I've got one because you sent me one.
Oh, good. I'm glad you
And I'm doing
do.
the right thing by my yard. And I tell you can mix it up. It's you can leave areas messy and other areas more manicured because you are under the pressure of suburbia or whatever that you face in the area that you are. But it definitely
Yeah.
is a lot different kind of garden. And it is I like it,
Yeah, and I think also just the idea of what's beautiful is evolving. I know in one of the Pollinator Pathway organizers in Stamford, Connecticut, worked with her town to update really the blight ordinance, because the blight ordinance as it was written was just, anything over whatever certain number of inches in the front yard was considered blight. And so she really worked with the town to say, if it's native plants, if it's not just someone forgetting, deciding not to mow, but it's intentional, then we need to update this language. So they did, to allow for intentional native plants to be higher than whatever the blight limit had been. So yeah, I think we're moving towards a wilder look and being able to accept it as a society, but it's a slow process.
Yeah, it is, because it's so ingrained, everybody, that manicured green lawn that your dad and everybody wanted, and now
Yeah.
you pass it along to you. I bet you an HOA is like a huge scourge to this kind of project.
Well, a lot of HOAs are taking it on, though. I mean, there's one in Norwalk where I live that joined the Pollinator Pathway, and a couple people really advocating for reducing the amount of pesticides used, and especially, and they ended up hiring an organic land care provider, Organic Ways and Means, which is a great one. Jeff Korjelek, I don't know, maybe you've had him on your show,
I
but
know him. Yeah, I might have had him on. Yeah.
I feel like you've had him on. So anyway, he made a good pitch to the HOA, and they said, okay, let's give it a try. And there, it's a coastal community, so it's just really important landscape to be managed in a sustainable way, and they're doing it, so they're a good model. It can happen.
So tell us, before we move on to the next subject, if people want to learn more, what's the website? And then do you have any events coming up where they can get, like native plants and stuff? I know sometimes you have plant sales. Are you associating anything in the spring with that?
So we don't do plant sales directly, but we have tons of information about where you can get plants on the website. It's pollinator-pathway.org. And honestly, it's just anything you could want to know about planting for pollinators is there. So I really encourage people to take a look at it. And we do, I mean, actually tomorrow night, for anyone near New Milford, Connecticut, I'm going to be speaking at the New Milford Library at 6:30 tomorrow night, Tuesday the 27th. And then we are part of a coalition of organizations that includes Connecticut Audubon Society and Sierra Club and a bunch of others, and Rivers Alliance in Connecticut, working to raise awareness about threats that neonicotinoid pesticides,
Very good.
which was kind of like being called the new DDT, the threats that they pose to birds, bees, food, water. And so we are holding a conference to help do this, to help everyone understand this issue better. We're holding a conference March 11th, which is a Monday, at Trinity College in Hartford. It's from noon to 5 p.m. So you can also join virtually. So
Oh,
we are
cool.
bringing together like nationally and internationally known scientists and researchers that are really looking into, the effects that these pesticides are having on environment, water, human health. So it's going to be a great discussion.
Yeah, you have a couple of my favorite people, Victor DeMasi. He's been on the show. He's great. And Dina Brewster, just to name a couple, but there's a lot more heavyweights coming in to talk about this.
Yeah,
stuff.
We have some, we do have some heavyweights, which I'm excited about. And the registration for that is at the Connecticut Audubon Society website. So I encourage people to go there and sign up.
It's called the New DDT Conference, March 11th, the Connecticut Coalition for Pesticide Reform. And it's neonics. That's the best way if you can't say neonicotinoids.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. The conference subtitle is What You Need to Know About the Pesticides Harming Connecticut's Birds, Bees, Wildlife, and People. So, I mean, they've banned DDT, or I've noticed, I've heard they're doing like cocktails now with a little bit of DDT and Agent Orange and stuff, right? Is that correct?
I heard that too. I don't know enough about that. But yeah, and I mean, we all are familiar with, or most of us remember the fight to try to ban DDT. Just watching the decline in the number of birds was so horrifying to everybody. And, you know, we're seeing that again. And we're seeing, you know, we've lost 3 billion birds in the last 50 years. We're seeing this crashes in, I mean, there's decades of research linking neonics to declines in pollinators and birds. You know, now we have more, it's just like every day there's more data on this. There's a recent EPA study showing neonics are pushing over 200 species towards extinction. And that comes on top of, you know, everything we've already known in the past. Locally, we have some data from the U.S. Geological Survey. So across the country, the USGA found that half of U.S. streams contain this pesticide. And they, luckily, I work for the Norwalk River Watershed Association. I'm very focused on the Norwalk River. And that is a river that the USGS tests in Connecticut. And they found that of 219 pesticides that they test for, many of which they found in the river, the one that was there at levels that were lethal to aquatic life, you know, insects and fish living in the river, was one of the neonics. And it's called imidacloprid. It's the one that is really mainly used on lawns and golf courses in this part of Connecticut. It's used to kill grubs. And there are a lot of alternatives.
There's a lot of organic grub controls.
Exactly.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, so we're talking to Louise Washer of the Pollinator Pathway and the Norwalk Watershed Association. You know, Louise, I do Gaiagram on WPKM, which is environmental headlines, letting everybody know what's happening, good and bad. And you know, the Environment America just posted this morning. It said the number of species on the brink of extinction just reached a stunning 44,000, including bumblebees, sea turtles, red wolves, and more threatened species worldwide. That's an all-time record and double the number listed by the International Union of Conservation Scientists just 10 years ago. So we've doubled the threat to all these species.
Yeah. And if you, the thing about neonics, the thing is that they, you know, by wiping out the insects, they are, which are at the base of the food chain, they're really acting to hollow out whole ecosystems. If you think about it, they're in the water, they're killing the insects in the water, which is what the bats, the frogs, the birds, the fish, you know, everything is depending on the insects. When you look at declines in birds, the greatest declines are among insect eating birds. So yeah, this pesticide is one that we really need to consider banning for use for aesthetic purposes. We had a bill the last 2 years, and we're working on one this year in Connecticut that would allow, you know, farms, agricultural uses of this, of neonics, but would ban it for use on lawns and golf courses for aesthetic purposes, especially since it's used for grubs and there are a lot of more sustainable alternatives. So that is what we're hoping to do this year. So another thing, if people are concerned about this, what they can do is reach out to your Connecticut House representative and senator, your local state reps, and just ask them to support a bill this year. The session is in progress right now, to support a bill that would restrict neonic pesticides and ban them from use on lawns and golf courses. Okay. There's a big push by the golf course industry to have golf courses exempted from any kind of restrictions like that. But if you look at the number of golf courses we have in Connecticut, we have estimated 8,000 to 12,000 acres of golf courses. So they're really a huge area.
The big culprits.
For our small state, yeah.
It's the same with Long Island. It's like, yeah. It's crazy.
And New York has banned neonics. I mean, this is the thing, and we're hoping helps us do this in Connecticut. The New York passed the Birds and Bees Protection Act right before Christmas. Governor Hochul signed it into law, and it not only bans non-agricultural uses, so lawns and golf courses and ornamental landscapes, but it also is looking at restricting the use of neonic coated seed.
Just going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the coated seed, one thing about that is, well, first of all, the way neonics work is they work systemically in the plant. So they are absorbed into the plant tissue. So it makes the plant itself, the leaves, the pollen, even the dew on its leaves are toxic to pollinators. But when you're talking about coated seed, some of that systemic pesticide is in the fruit. So it's used on almost all corn, except for organic corn. You can't wash that pesticide off of the corn that you're eating. So we're finding, or scientists are finding it, that it's having like an effect on human health as well. The CDC found 50% of the population had these neonics in their blood, and the highest concentrations were found in children. So, yep.
And just today they released a report that in Indiana that said that pregnant women in that farm state show an increased amount of toxic weed killer in their urine.
I saw that. Yeah, and the University of Illinois did a study of pregnant women in the U.S. and found that over 95% had neonics in their bodies. The other thing about the coated seed is that a small part, so five, this is industry studies show that 5% of the coating is absorbed into the plant, and then the other 95% just moves through soil and into water and ends up killing, you know, non-target, as they say.
Yeah, and these coated seeds, when they spread them, most of them don't sprout. They don't become a plant. They're eaten by birds, and the birds, I understand, even one seed could kill a bird. That's my understanding.
Yeah, one seed can kill a bird. The other humongous problem with the coated seeds, I don't think we're going to see a ban on coated seeds in Connecticut this year, but that is our goal. We're going to keep working on that. One huge problem is that seed coatings are exempted from government regulation because of a loophole. There's a loophole at the federal level that exempts pesticides on seeds from being even labeled as pesticides because they're on seeds. So, you know, for that reason, like for example, the Connecticut Department of Agriculture doesn't even track how much of our food is grown with treated seed because it's just not considered a pesticide. So it's a huge non-regulated and often unnecessary escape of this toxic pesticide into ecosystems. And I say unnecessary because with the coated seeds, the pesticide is there on the seed prophylactically. You know, whether or not there are pests there, you're introducing the pesticide into the soil. So often it's overkill, you know.
Sure. And this is one good area where we, the consumer, can voice our opinion and pressure these companies. Like, for instance, like I think, you know, Home Depot, for instance, sells plants that have neonicotinoids in them. And you could ask them and at least voice your opinion that you don't want them, you know, and also frequent a purveyor of plants that are just organic or natural.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of our big things that we shout from the mountaintops at the pollinator pathway is, you know, when the best place really to shop for plants, if you want a plant for wildlife, pollinators and birds, is at your local nursery where you always go in there and ask for, you know, where are your native plants, and say that you want to make sure they're pesticide free, because we need to let the nursery industry know that there's a demand for, you know, pesticide free local native plants.
I will put a plug in here for action for my listeners. If you want to do something, there's a company called Nutrien Ag Solutions, the biggest seller of agriculture seeds in the country. And there's a campaign to get them to stop selling seeds coated in neonicotinoids. So,
I didn't know about that.
yep.
That's
So,
cool. I'm going to Google that.
Yeah. So that's something you could do. Just a note to them. Let them know. You know, I mean, you know, one of the biggest financial in the financial world, one of the biggest boondoggles of the last 10 years was that Bayer bought Monsanto because they wanted to change the name because glyphosate became such a big problem, and they paid for it. Their bottom line, their value is all decreased because of all the lawsuits that they've had to take on and the pressure from the public. So this is where we, the consumer, can do more, I think. And that's why we have programs like this, just to let you know what's going on out there.
Yeah, and I do think that people are becoming more aware, and I mean, I think that's why the pollinator pathway spread so quickly, and there was just this huge reaction. I just think people want something they can do in their own backyards. You know, people, we all feel the stress of the
absolutely
biodiversity loss, and you know, want to act. But I will say, trying to work for legislation
it's
at the
hard.
state level, you can see how powerful that industry is.
Thank you, Louise Washer, for what you're doing. You know, it's so important to keep the pressure on. It's like I follow you all the time. And as soon as I see you're up to something, I want to have you on so we can talk about it. Again, let's mention that this is a new DDT conference sponsored by the Connecticut Coalition for Pesticide Reform. And if you want to go, it's March 11th, noon to 5 p.m. at the McCook Auditorium at Trinity College in Hartford. And you can also attend by Zoom. It's just a nominal sum of $15 or $20, depending on when you get involved. And what about dicamba and glyphosate, since we're talking about all these things? Do you worry about those, or are you just totally involved with neonics?
Well, I do worry about those, and I have a very grim pesticide talk that I give sometimes where I go into each one. I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm just, you know, I'm someone who's concerned about the environment and what's happening to the birds and the bees, basically. Glyphosate has, there are many research, a lot of research, many studies showing its effects on bumblebees. They upset the balance, the biota of the bumblebee gut, kind of the same way they affect people. So that's one way they're harmful. I mean, I do, our focus at the Pollinator Pathway is very much pollinators, and the neonicotinoids are having such a dramatic effect that we are focusing right now on them the most. But yeah, I mean, we're really promoting the idea of a chemical-free lawns. And a lot of towns, one of the things the Pollinator Pathway website has on it is a page where you can look at what towns and communities, what ordinances they've passed to try to put in place some local restrictions on these kinds of pesticides. So like, for example, in Norwalk, the city where I live, we passed an ordinance banning the use of pesticides on municipal property. We're trying to set an example for homeowners and show them that it could be done, and work with landscapers to come up with, you know, ways of managing without pesticides.
And there are a lot of landscaping people now doing pesticide-free lawns and gardens when they're maintaining them. I got rid of mine because they kept, I told them what I wanted, and they kept breaking the rules. They behind your back, they do it because they know you like a green lawn. But if you got a totally manicured, weed-free, you know, it's not a mixture of different kinds of plants, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it kind of looks like, it just looks weird now. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, I don't know. I feel like it's probably got poison on it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, your dog goes and rolls around on the lawn and comes in and rolls around on your couch. You have children who play on the lawn. Right now, most of the places in Connecticut that I know of, in New York, you may know better than I, but the sports fields are the ones where they're restricting or banning the use of these chemicals on the sports field because it's getting all over the kids playing sports.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to put pressure on your school, or, you know, on your landscape provider, you know, the person who does your work. It's, you have to keep an eye out on them because they will cheat to make it look good.
Yeah, they totally will. Yeah, Connecticut actually has a law that for grades, schools, elementary through through junior high, they can't use pesticides on any of the fields. They allow it for high school, but
we're talking to Louise Washer of the Pollinator Pathway and the Norwalk Watershed Association. You know, I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of local groups that are Pollinator Pathway, just to say, you know, here's some people doing it, folks. I mean, this is just a couple, like I found on your website, Geraldine Clater Magnet Academy, the Black Rock Yacht Club Pollinator Garden, the Blue Star Garden in St. Mary's by the Sea, Black Rock, and the Fairfield Avenue Pollinator Planters. Those are just four that are doing this. Is there anyone else you want to shout out to that you think is doing a really great job? And
well, you are on Long Island, right? And Suffolk County has done an amazing job. That Pollinator Pathway was even mentioned in a New York Times article.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so I'm going to have to go get a hold of
that. Made it into the Times. Yeah, just all over the place. I mean, the thing that's been so great about working with the Pollinator Pathway is just to see all the different versions of this, you know, the different ideas that people come up with for how to talk to their neighbors about this, what they're doing in their own yards, what they're doing in their own towns. You know, if you don't have a yard, container planting. In our next newsletter that's coming out this spring for the Pollinator Pathway, we have a whole article on the importance of container plantings in urban settings. And I work a lot in urban settings on the Pollinator Pathway. So trying to cram as many native shrubs and wildflowers and trees as we can in every park in Norwalk. And so, yeah.
Yeah. This is great work that you do, Louise, and we'll have you back the next time something's coming up. But one more time, there's a conference coming up about neonicotinoids, and it's at the sponsored by the Connecticut Coalition for Pesticide Reform. You can check, where do they go again?
Pollinator? Yeah, so to register, go to Connecticut Audubon Society website. So it's ctaudubon.org/conference, actually, and it will come up.
Great. Well, thanks for joining me here on Digging in the Dirt. It's a pleasure having you, Louise Washer.
Thanks, Kevin. Always a pleasure.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.